Fast Forward is a series from Tomorrow Unlocked by Kaspersky, because your digital life deserves complete protection. Whether you're a game designer, gamer, or esports player, every minute of your gaming matters. Protected with the new Kaspersky. Search Kaspersky on your smart speakers or check the show notes for the latest offers with 30-day money-back guarantee. Fast Forward is written and presented by Ghislain Boddington. Episode 2, Women in Gaming. Empowerment leads to engagement.
There is a future that we think we know already, one that seems as safe as yesterday. It lies somewhere between what we know and what we can imagine, between the limits of today and the possibilities of tomorrow. But this future has a hidden dimension, a mysterious secret area that we like to call the past. In many bars in the early 1980s, a strange black box appeared with a shining top, buttons poking out of the sides, and a coin slot. Pac-Man had arrived. This maze action video game became a worldwide craze as part of the arcade revolution, and is still one of the best-selling games of all time. With little open-mouthed cutesy avatars, you rushed around the maze, and while trying to avoid the ghost gang, gobbled up as many power pellets as you could. Pac-Man's Japanese director, Toru Iwatani, had aimed at creating a game that could appeal to women as well as men, a big gap in the consumer market, which he believed was due to the fact that most video games of their time, with their consistent themes of war or sports, were just not attractive to women. As it turned out, Pac-Man's record-breaking success was recognisably linked to its huge popularity amongst women gamers. But sadly, a patriarchal narrative was woven around this. The success of getting more women gaming was not seen as the important outcome. In fact, the conclusion was that women having fun in the gaming arcades was a very useful tool to use, as it attracted more men into the arcades. And so the gaming sector continued to be dominated by rather sexist men, as proved by the US publishers of Pac-Man's release of Ms. Pac-Man in 1982, featuring a gobbler with a little pink bow on her head. Earlier the same year, Electronic Games magazine featured a woman gamer on its front cover. "Move over, guys, here come the girls," it says, showing a glossy photo of a young woman in tight jeans and high-heeled boots, energetically gaming away on an arcade machine. Inside, we hear all about Ms. Pac-Man, created for lady arcaders to enjoy. We learn that when Ms. Pac-Man meets the original Pac-Man in the maze, an electronic wedding takes place, and that her high score is rewarded with a stork flying onto the screen carrying a tiny gobbling bundle of joy. So what was to be next in women's gaming? Very little, in fact, until nearly 20 years later, in 1998, when Brenda Laurel, a pioneer interactive media designer and gender technology researher, gave a game-changing presentation at the TED conference in Monterey, California. On a low-lit stage scattered with a jumble of computers, leads and screens, she shared her research, asking the question no one was asking. Why hasn't anybody built any computer games for little girls? Why is that? It can't just be a giant sexist conspiracy. These people aren't that smart. There's $6 billion on the table. They would go for it if they could figure out how. Brenda's research marked the start of a new phase. The issue had been voiced out loud, And across the next decade, controversy about the diversification of gaming formats away from the traditional conflict game became vicious. Most people just wanted to enable a wider demographic of users, but it resulted in a huge online misogynist backlash labelled hashtag Gamergate, a full-on culture war attack against the greater inclusion of women by predominantly younger male heterosexual players. There was no more avoiding the debate, and although the gaming sector continues, even today, to be dominated by men, as the content creators, the coders, the businessmen, the founders, the investors. And although globally women still find it harder than men to pursue a career in this sector, the involvement of girls, women, non-binary and intersectional people as both content makers and players is now unstoppable. Finally, the multi-billion pound entertainment game sector has woken up, and so it should. In the 2020s, the facts show that nearly 50% of gamers are women. We need to be aware that even now, in some parts of the world, it's still not easy for women to be included in the gaming sector, due to various provisos linked to culture and religion restricting women's activities. But young women who really want to get into gaming are finding a way, and helping others at the same time. Gahada El-Mokhbel is the CEO of GCON, the Girls Convention for Games Developers and Women in Gaming in Saudi Arabia. Today, in fact, about 46% of the gamers in Saudi Arabia are women, but previously, as she tells us, it was rarer.
I actually started playing video games since I was little, and it's something that I used to do all the time with my siblings. The scene in the community was a bit different from the way it is now in Saudi Arabia. And so back then, the only girls that I know that played video games were me and my sister. Women were not really welcome back then. Back in 2012, actually, was the first time I heard of something that is called GCON, which is the Girls' Convention, which I did not attend because that was a very new concept to me, you know, women and games and girls' conventions and let's go and play video games with girls. That just didn't make sense to me. But the feedback was amazing in social media and everyone talking about this amazing convention for women. All the girls were there. Everyone had pictures and videos, and I really remember getting so jealous. And so the next year, 2013, I made sure that I would attend this convention. And it was massive. It was sponsored by PlayStation. I went there with my little sister and had no expectations whatsoever. But then entering this huge, massive convention, tons and tons of games, and then 3,000 girls attending this convention and kind of like getting to know everyone and talking with everyone and all the different girls who play all the different types of games was insane to me. It was one of the best days of my life that I remember to this day because it did really shape my career. And it touched me in a way, like I knew that day, that second, that I wanted to be within the team that enabled all this community work. I really had that fire within me to actually be part of this community that is enabling all of this.
Today, with numerous women's gaming gatherings and networks emerging worldwide, women are starting to take their rightful place in the gaming sector. The expansion of the range of content and formats is also, in part, responsible for this. There are so many more choices today. Educational and adventure games, immersive virtual world and role-playing games, multiplayer electronic sports competitions, known as esports, and even cultural games that aim at solving local and global issues together on your mobile, your laptop, your gaming console, or even in virtual reality. After Gahada volunteered for GCON, writing articles and helping to organise events, including game jams, where everyone works together to make games from scratch, she joined the team, and in 2018 she became the CEO, with her focus set on framing a strategic plan for the future.
The new strategy that we have created for GCON consists of three departments, which are game development, esports, and entertainment. And within each department, we have a different set of goals, plans, and even teams. Before we even plan those events or activities, in each department, we do a kind of like a market research to understand how can we support women? What do women actually need in esport? What do they need in game development? How is it different in esport than game development? And the differences are massive. The type of programs that we provide in game development are completely different from the programs we provide in esports. When it comes to esports, all of our projects and programs are only for women. We make sure to identify the talents. We make sure to support and empower and enable those talents. We want to make them role models. We want them to have more exposure in Saudi Arabia and internationally. So some of the programs or the projects that we currently have is we're starting slow, taking it step by step with them because we're very careful when it comes to the esports sector, because it has lots of like harassments and all those issues. So we're very, very careful. So the programs we started in 2021 were monthly esports tournaments for women, and those were online. So this time we required that they would come to the venue and meet and compete together. The next programs that we're going to have are basically incubating those talents. So incubating teams, incubating talents, providing the spaces, coaches, sending them abroad, and all of that. With that said, we do want to create that community that we had in the first GCON conventions. And for that, we have events like She Jams. So She Jams is a game jam only for women, and She Jams accepts participants from all around the world, all women around the world, and not only Saudi women.
It's clear that these women-only events and support networks are still needed, as one of the continuing issues for women playing games is safety. Let's go to the safety zone to find out more about enabling women and non-binary people to feel protected and welcomed in games.
The Safety Zone with David M., Principal Security Researcher at Kaspersky.
I think it's important to bear in mind that women gamers are particularly vulnerable. If we look at our broader society, hardly a day passes when there isn't an attack on a woman, when women aren't facing abuse, when women aren't facing discrimination. And to imagine that that's going to be any different within a gaming environment would be ludicrous, to be honest. It's really important that any situation which involves trolling, which involves abuse, or really anything that makes them feel uncomfortable or is harmful to them, that they know who to report that to, they know the mechanism for reporting it, and that they do indeed do that. It's vital that we see more and more women involved in the design and the production of games, online games and offline games, so that actually the environment that is being framed is one actually which reflects women as well as reflecting men. One of the things that sometimes puts gamers off from protecting the device they're using with internet security products is their fear that this will slow down the computer or will in some other way impact the game. I think it's really important to realize that that doesn't have to be the case. One of the important things to check when gamers are looking for an internet security solution is one which is actually going to work around their gaming experience. I'm thinking here of a sort of gaming or do not disturb mode, which we have in Kaspersky Solutions, where it will turn off notifications, for example, while the game is underway, so it doesn't impact on the gaming experience.
With so much of your life being digital, it's important to stay safe online. For more cybersecurity tips from Kaspersky, check the show notes.
Gahada's story illustrates how women are finding joy and professional success, both playing and developing games. It proves that inclusive design methodologies can unlock previously unhidden creativity. Gahada and her generation have been enabled, as is often the case, by the activism of the generations before them, driving themselves forward into this value-driven yet restricted environment and advocating for fair access for all. And she becomes a role model onwards for the girls of today as she focuses her strategic work on enabling women to go further, even into the emerging sector of esports, another traditionally male domain. Jennifer Donahue, head of publishing and marketing at HiDef in California, USA, is one of these long-term activists. She has been working in gaming for 25 years.
I really love role-playing games, and so it goes into the idea of being another character and transporting yourself into somebody else. Growing up, there was no strong woman Jedi in Star Wars, and so I wanted to be Luke Skywalker. I ended up being characters mainly that were men because I wanted those powers and those abilities. There wasn't a woman who was able to do that. And so in the very early role-playing games like Wizardry, I didn't care about gender. I didn't care about anything else other than the cool abilities. And at the time, I had the ability to put myself into those characters. What's great about today is that you have so many more options. You can create a character that looks like you. You can create a character that doesn't look like you. I'm part of the LGBTQ community, and while I represent one of the letters, I'm not non-binary. And we know that non-binary folks have a really difficult time finding representation in avatars in gaming. So what we did was go out and we did two focus groups with non-binary players to really understand what they wanted from an avatar system. And so in that, we discovered that things that might actually be, you know, no-brainers or that the light bulb went off for us, you have to give them the ability to do whatever they want with their characters. So whether it's putting accessories on their characters, whether it's giving them the ability to customize size or shape, the ability to even have prosthetic limbs if you are looking for the ability to showcase that you are disabled and you want to be able to show that. So one of the things that we did was really listen, really understand where people are coming from and want to show that representation in the products that we're making to allow people to just be themselves, be their authentic selves in the game that they represent. Super important to those players, and we want to be there for them. The benefit from that is that we can bring these new perspectives and these new voices into game making. In the game industry, only 25 to 35% of the workforce are women or folks that identify as women. And the challenge there is you're not able to get those voices represented in the products that you're making. They actually asked me, Jen, are you recording non-binary people dancing? Because I would imagine that might be different than a male or a female. And I was staring at them dumbfounded, like, that is absolutely correct. We should be doing that, and we will be doing that so that you can make sure that not only is it the appearance of the character is any way that you want to have it, but that the actions of the avatar also mimic what you would expect and what you want that character to be. And so that was a really insightful moment for us that isn't just about the appearance. It isn't just about the body shape or the accessories. It's also about the actions that come behind the character that allow our players to connect with that experience in an authentic way.
So Jen is noticing the huge shift forward that is taking place. Nowadays, when she teaches gaming classes at universities in the US, she is happy to see that up to 70% of the students are women. She also feels that finally there is far more focus in hiring women and in getting women into leadership positions. As Jen reminded me, you don't have to be a coder to work in the game sector. There are so many more roles to reach for. On the business side, in marketing and publishing departments, in the design teams, in quality assurance and localization roles.
What's super important for women to really shine and be able to participate in gaming in a crucial way is to have a safe environment. And I think what we're seeing nowadays is as overt harassment is starting to decline, obviously this isn't everywhere and this is still, you know, a challenge that women face in the industry, as we've seen through news articles. But the next stage of evolution in helping women perform at their best is recognizing things like unconscious bias, which we're transitioning into really identifying this as life experiences. Many of the men in the industry are older and have grown up learning to behave in a certain way. And as a woman who is also representing that older group, it's my role to help them understand where they are behaving badly. And part of what I'm doing is really focusing on calling out that behavior, because I have a status now that I am able to do that. So that's how I help the next generation, is by speaking up, by speaking out, by pointing out where my coworkers, my male coworkers, can be different in the way that they're approaching and interacting with women. Calling out actions in the moment that you see it in a professional, in a respectful way, because many times the men that are doing this don't actually know that they're doing this. What I've had the pleasure of doing and why I'm at a startup with people that I love and admire is that these are folks who behave awesome and create a safe space, allow me to be my authentic self, to bring who I am to work every day. And when I can do that and not even think about that, I can perform at my best. My coworkers can perform at the best. And so that's really the key to unlocking success for women, is to allow them to have that safe space. I think it's important too, as we talk about the challenges that we have, to recognize the power of an ally and to celebrate them and to let them know how much we appreciate them, because we all know positive reinforcement works better than negative reinforcement. My vision of the game industry going forward is that everyone feels like they can bring their authentic selves to work, and so that we have representation from all different diversity groups. And that only makes better products, which makes better business sense, which makes players thrilled and excited to see themselves in our games and to play the games and experiences. Nothing is better than putting a smile on people's face, knowing that they can see themselves in the products that they play.
Today, women are claiming their equal share of these new worlds, and there are plenty of tips on how to do so. Pick carefully who you want to work with. Raise your voice and learn how to deliver your ideas with authenticity, and support other women and minorities. These are all essential actions to take to encourage the continuation of this positive shift. It's an equity imperative. Plus, as games platforms are finding out rapidly, it leads to bigger sales. This is such an important sector for the future of work. Immersive virtual worlds are evolving all around us, often being created in-game by huge groups of diverse players working together. They are not just deciding on their avatar appearances and accessories, they are collectively collaborating to make the types of environments they want to exist in. Homes and social meeting spaces, festivals and galleries, even governments and schools, all to share. This is called world building and is the exact opposite to the competitive conflict-driven games of the last decades. Finally, games and virtual worlds have the potential to create solutions for some of the real-world problems we have around us, rather than just magnify them. Across Season 2, we cover a range of fascinating topics, including the metaverse, the ever-growing prevalence of data in and out of the home, in telegram to telepresence, the concept of extending our lives through digital health, in extended self, our future digital twins, and the world of cyborgs and embedded technologies in cyborg shifts. We also celebrate the contributions of women in STEM and discuss the need for greater representation in the field. So make sure you're following us on your favourite podcast channel. You can also read more interviews and stories from Fast Forward Season 1 and 2 on tomorrowunlocked.com. We've added a link in the show notes. You have been listening to Fast Forward. This has been a Sounds Fancy production with music by Simon James and Max DeWardner. You also heard the voices of my special guests, Gahada El-Mokhbel, Jennifer Donahue and David M. My name is Ghislaine Boddington, and I have been your writer and presenter.
Hello, it's Susie O'Neill here. I hope you're enjoying Fast Forward. If you're interested in knowing more about technology and how it's affecting business, we've got a brand new series from Kaspersky you're going to love. It's called Insight Story, and it's designed to give business leaders the insight they need to make decisions about what tech can do for their businesses. Season one is out now with episodes about the metaverse, blockchain, smart energy, extended reality, and more. It features tech experts from around the world. Plus, we speak to people in business who are actually using the technology, and they give their insight into what they've learned. Search Insight Story on your smart speakers or wherever you get your podcasts.